Good evening and welcome to the Carolyn Holt Show. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. I am excited. I guess I haven't seen you since before the Memorial Day holiday. Well, I am thrilled that you're back to share tonight's show with me because I have a wonderful guest. Her name is Professor Linda Harbert. She's a trauma specialist and a marriage and family therapist at Cal State Dominguez Hills. And she's, I tell you, she is such an awesome therapist in terms of helping people find their way and find the process that works for them, especially in light of the challenges that many people are having with the current leader of the free world. So it should be an awesome show because she's going to help us out. There are a lot of people that struggle with the current leadership in the White House. I am one of those people. So if you have questions, you can feel free to call tonight. The phone number is area code 323-293-3375. Again, that's area code 323-293-3375. And if you have questions or thoughts or comments that you'd like to share, I'd love to hear from you. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Linda Harbert. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine.
You're fine?
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, you look well. And what I want to get started with is in your title, you are known as a trauma specialist. And I'd love to know, how did you get to that point in life that you knew that this was something that you could specialize in and that you had a real interest? And how did you get to decide that you were going to be a therapist as well? When you were a little tot,
yes,
I'm sure you didn't say, you know what, I'm going to grow up and be a therapist. So how did all of this come together for you?
Well, I think the therapist part's probably the easiest.
The easiest? Okay.
Yes. And I wasn't quite a tot, but I wasn't that far off.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually wanted to be, I decided I wanted to be a therapist. I was like 8 or 9.
So soon. Oh, my God.
Well, I had a role model, and it was one of my godfathers was, he was completing medical school. Mm-hmm. And I originally wanted to be a medical doctor like him.
Okay.
And my parents bought me, which is really dating myself, a biology set that required you to, it had all these like cute little animals, but it also required you to dissect the frog.
Okay. Well.
And I did, played with everything but the frog. And my father, I think it was, reminded me, if you want to be a medical doctor, mm-hmm. you're going to have to dissect the frog.
Okay.
And I quickly identified, well, then I'll just be, well, then I'll just be a head doctor.
Okay. And because that rid all the animals, not just
right.
the frog.
Right, right. And I did, and I didn't have to use a scalpel or anything like that.
I hear you.
So that's how it came to be.
Okay.
And then I was lucky enough that my parents nurtured that. So they started probably like the end of elementary school, beginning mm-hmm. of middle school.
Wow.
They started making sure that they had Psychology Today mm-hmm. in the house.
My goodness.
And then at the school I went to for middle school, you did have to do a career project. So I did it on psychologist.
I love it.
So, yeah. And so when I went off to college, I was very clear that I was majoring in psychology.
Okay.
And I wanted to be a psychotherapist.
Okay.
Yeah, I was very clear. The first two semesters, I didn't know what I was. I was like, oh my gosh. But yeah, it was very, very clear. Mm-hmm. And I think because of the influence of my godfather, mm-hmm. I wanted to work with people who had serious issues.
Oh, okay.
So the trauma part came out a little accidentally, but they ran in my undergrad program, they ran it like graduate school if you were a declared major.
Okay.
So I was actually, one of my field placements was working with children who had been removed from parental care and mm-hmm. were now wards of the state.
Okay.
So child survivors of child abuse, young children, survivors of child abuse that were in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that placement for quite a while.
Okay.
And then one of our mentors, one of the professors, he also developed a counseling center on site. We did not have one before.
Wow.
And so all of us that were declared majors had to work in the counseling center.
Okay.
And then there was also an incident that occurred with a friend of mine, and I didn't know what I was doing then, but eventually, in hindsight, I was doing crisis counseling with her.
Wow.
So when I applied to grad school, I knew, I sort of had an idea mm-hmm. of who I wanted to work with. And mm-hmm. then the trauma part, which actually started as especially in disability, mm-hmm. expanded from medical traumas, mm-hmm. so amputations, burns. Yeah, I carried mm-hmm. the amputation burn unit and things like that.
Now, was this locally or in the Bay Area?
Because I have a travel history. I left the Bay Area and did my undergrad in Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in Forest Grove at Pacific University.
Uh-huh.
And then I applied to graduate school, actually, back in the Bay Area, at San Francisco, University of San Francisco, mm-hmm. and I applied down here as well, and did not get accepted there because okay. University of San Francisco was also a major research, so the competition was stiff even then,
mm-hmm.
and actually originally came down here accepting a spot in a movement therapy program because I was also a dancer. I had a dual major as an undergrad because I was actually training to be an Olympic judge in gymnastics.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
You didn't okay. Know that? Yeah. I thought you was going to say you had your hip-hop groove back then.
No. Gymnastics, which I found out. I missed my final exam, but I found out while I was studying to be a gymnastic judge.
Okay.
At that time, and remember, or some people might not know, Oregon actually was the home of all the gymnast training, mm-hmm. and I was in Forest Grove.
Okay.
The people who are gymnastic judges, you have to go through all the routines in your training.
What?
Yeah. Balance beam, which I didn't like in high school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the balance beam, the hoops, the women doing the hoops.
Okay.
The bars, the parallel bars, the floor dance. At uh-huh. that time, it's also there was rhythmic dance. We had to go through all of that in our training.
Mm.
Yeah. And then I missed the final exam, so that was like.
So you could, though, give Simone a run for her money.
Well, no, I would, no. But I do understand that
you understand
little game.
I understand,
yes.
Do.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the hobble, the horse, the, yes. you know what. I don't think I ever got over that. I just sort of ran up, and after okay. so many times, it was like, you just run over.
Oh, okay.
But
pommel horse.
But pommel horse, the pommel yeah, horse. Yeah, yeah, I never could do that. And okay. A lot of the people I think were training was. But anyway, so I had originally, movement therapy was beginning to start there then. And movement therapists at that time were working with severe mental illness. They were really only working in hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And since psychotherapy really requires a lot of vocabulary,
mm-hmm.
movement therapy allows people who either don't have access to language
mm-hmm.
or can't mm-hmm. to release and work through what's going on for them you know, through their body. And since I had minored in dance, I thought, okay, that would be really good. Mm-hmm. And then I decided after I started the program, no, it wasn't good. But here I was in Los Angeles.
Okay.
What I was going to, you know, what was I going to do?
Okay.
And then I applied to University of Southern California, USC, and got accepted in their program, counseling with a specialty in rehabilitation. So I left the dance.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I went to USC.
Okay.
Which I think kept my parents happy because they were like, you know, we're flown you to Oregon, you're in LA, you know, what are you, what mm-hmm. are you doing? Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I'm happy to hear you say is that you were clear when you got to college, because I was clear too. And people thought there was something wrong with me because the notion, I guess, is that you go to college to find yourself.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I had found myself already. I just needed to express myself.
Yes. So. Yeah.
So it's good to hear that somebody else knew why they were in college besides me.
Yes, I did. But I will have to acknowledge we are the minority.
Okay.
Most people go to college and they really don't know.
Okay.
And I think that's just important to say so people don't have any shame about that.
Oh, and flashbacks.
And flashbacks, right. Right. There's a small percentage.
Okay.
So we're in that group.
All right.
That no.
Yes.
And I think the other thing, and I don't know if this happened for you, is you think you know, mm-hmm. and then you start doing the major, especially when you get in your major courses, and then sometimes people go, oh, no, this isn't what I thought. Mm-hmm. So when you add that part onto it, there's actually a very small number of people that actually go in with their declared major mm-hmm. and come out with the major that they thought.
Okay.
You know, so, but yes, yes.
But no, I understand that because for me, I always love to talk. So it was clear to me, okay, well, you need to be talking somewhere or writing or something along those lines.
Yes.
So that's how I came to mind. But you had dance and you had all of these things that you could integrate into what you wanted to do,
which is
wonderful. Because often that's not the case.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
So you're at USC.
Yes.
And you get involved in this new program that they have.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was an old program.
It was an old program.
It was an old program. But there was a new program that was developing at Cedars-Sinai through a grant through the National Mental Health Institute.
Mm-hmm.
It was a research grant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was specifically looking at the impact of immediate contact with sexual assault survivors. So this is rape.
Mm.
And we were doing research. There was research that was being done around that. And I did apply for that.
Okay.
And so that was my initial, you know, involvement in trauma work.
Mm-hmm.
We were dealing with, like I said, initial sexual assault, one time only.
Hmm.
People were, not all the time, but a lot of the time, they were going to go all the way through to the legal process.
Okay.
So that created some additional problems for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was in program also in looking at couples and family impact,
mm-hmm.
we did crisis intervention. So we actually went to the emergency rooms. We were at Cedars-Sinai. We were responsible for Cedars emergency room and several others.
Okay.
So we would go on site as soon as a rape victim or a rape survivor was picked up by the police. They would notify us.
Oh, okay. And so it was through a notification process.
It was through
process.
A notification. So
okay.
We were at the emergency room. It would make contact there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would also do face-to-face counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And if appropriate, we would work with their partner.
Oh.
And yes, and we would provide treatment as well as support all the way through to the legal process.
Oh, my.
Yeah, we had what we call advocates whose their only purpose or one of their main purposes was to accompany the survivor through all the court appearances. Now, that system is now currently set up as a statewide system. But at the time, we were just doing it as part of our program.
Oh, okay.
And then we also did community education.
Okay.
And
so you are a pioneer in a lot of the things that are currently in place.
Yes. Yes, which might be a good or bad thing.
No, it's always good to be a pioneer.
It's always good to be. Okay.
Wow. Well, that is so impressive.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying the conversation. But we're going to go to break.
Okay.
And when we come back, we'll get a little bit more into trauma and how it initially is manifested in terms of the emotional self or the psychological or physical, as you just stated.
Okay.
So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Mastering math can be big fun. Fun for you and everyone. Play it each and every day. Master math the easy way.
Sing, play it. Math Maze.
Why not turn math time into fun time with Math Maze, the new game craze. Get yours today at mathmaze.us.
Mom, now you can help your son master math and have big fun. Play it each and every day. Master math the easy way.
Sing, play it. Math Maze.
Make sure your child owns the skills necessary for success in high school algebra. Get it now. MathMaze.us. MathMaze.us.
And now you can help your daughter play it like you know you ought to. Play it each and every day. Master Math the easy way. Say it, play it. MathMaze.
MathMaze cards contain both Spanish and English. Get yours today at MathMaze.us. That's MathMaze.us.
Friend, here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news.
Great choice, Portis. We had a little discussion before the show, and she hit the nail on the head. But thank you so much for joining the Carolyn Holt Show tonight. I have a very special guest. Her name is Professor Linda Harbert from Cal State Dominguez Hills, and we're talking about trauma. And earlier she was sharing with us how she came to be the trauma specialist that she is today. And when we went to break, she was talking about some of the pioneering work that she was at the forefront of, especially at Cedars.
Well, in conjunction with Dr. Adele Hess, I have to say, because she was the one who was actually who got the grant going and that kind of a thing.
Okay.
And so that was, and there were a lot of things happening in Los Angeles mm-hmm. during the time that I was at Cedars. We had the Night Stalker, we had the Hillside Strangler, and yes, I was involved, and we provided services and support to law enforcement around that.
Wow.
Yeah. Dating myself. But what I was also doing is I was still in school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, as I said, it was disability. And there were issues around, there were psychological issues around disability. But as I began to work with it and then working with some colleagues and discussing, there's also trauma around disability. I was at Rancho Las Amigas Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, Rancho predominantly was known for having survivors, veterans from the Vietnam War, heavy
okay.
spinal cord injury.
Oh, okay.
We also had a lot of brain injury,
mm-hmm.
not related to war,
mm-hmm.
but people diving into swimming pools or car accidents and that kind of a thing.
Okay.
Burn unit, severe arthritis, the severe of all medical conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Guillain-Barré, which was a new disorder that no one knew about.
Okay.
It was a circulatory disorder. We had cases there at Rancho. And the only way you could get to Rancho, and I think this still might be true, is you had to be referred from another medical facility or doctor.
Oh, okay.
You could not walk in.
Okay.
So these were the cases that were the most difficult, the most challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, I also started training counselors on how to work with severe, what we call severe disabilities. But I was also discussing with some of my colleagues in rehab about some of the cases that we were seeing, some of the women that were spinal cord injury, maybe paraplegic, and really what is any of this or could this accident have been related to domestic violence? We began
mm-hmm.
to have that discussion.
Okay.
That was separate from people who really, because of a car accident or a motorcycle accident, and mm-hmm. Would have some kind of an injury, person who was a survivor from an attempted mugging, and maybe became a hemiparalysis, so only one side of the body was impacted because they were assaulted. So we were looking at the medical and the medical issues around disability and the psychological issues related to that, but there was also possibly a trauma piece related to that. And then I started expanding. So I had the sexual assault, had the disability, also carried stroke during the stroke unit at that time, the multiple sclerosis unit at that time.
My.
Yeah, Rancho was a beautiful, wonderful learning experience. Mm-hmm. So I was getting my hospital experience, as my mentors said in graduate school. and then when I moved into private practice, I began to do a couple of other things. One, I started volunteering with American Red Cross, which at the time they had no mental health unit.
Mm-hmm.
So I got trained in family services. But then when there was a fire or something like that, then I would get sent out to deal with the psychological issues around small disaster critical incidents.
Yes.
That began to grow. And so I expanded that to work with critical incidents around bank robberies, responding to bank robberies, responding to major critical incidents of, just not the bank robberies, but also issues around the airport. Someone seen accident on the freeway where there were fatalities.
Okay.
And they needed some support around that.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, they didn't see the accident as a result of their job, so they needed some support around that.
Okay.
And so I started continuing to build and expand on what's the impact of critical incidents, which can be trauma exposure.
Okay.
Because all of us have trauma exposure.
I'm glad you said that, because that's where we need to start our conversation.
Okay.
Because many times the response is, you know, you perhaps need to get over this,
yes.
or what's wrong with you?
Yes.
And so share a little bit about what trauma exposure can look like. And then I want to get back to the issue of rape, because there's a question I have surrounding that.
Okay.
But
this is my exciting subject.
Oh, okay. All right.
Trauma exposure is when we are presented with an event that threatens us.
All right.
Physically.
All right.
We used to also diagnose it that it had a psychological threat, so it didn't have to have a physical threat. But there is a feeling of doom or a fear of death.
Okay.
And depending on your age, those things will vary. What children perceive as highly horrific and threatening and at a life or death kind of a thing is different than what adults do.
Okay.
Or, you know,
very
adolescents.
Good.
So, you know, the threat is different.
So it depends on when you had your exposure to the trauma.
Correct. And for adults, we really have to remember that a lot of things that are not threatening to us are very threatening to children.
Excellent.
And so that's a really important thing. So it's perceived as a life-threatening event.
All right.
And what we used to speculate about in the 70s and early 80s, because of the brain research, we now can see empirically that the initial response to a life-threatening event is freezing.
Mm.
All mammals freeze.
Mm-hmm.
It's an involuntary response.
Okay.
Unless you train to override it.
Mm-hmm.
And what the public has known that to be is the fight or flight syndrome.
Okay. I think most people are familiar with
right.
that expression.
Right. But the initial exposure to a traumatic experience is to freeze.
Okay.
And people, they'll start narrowing their vision, focusing in. okay. on where they perceive the threat.
Okay.
That's when people's hearts are racing and pounding. Mm-hmm. Muscles begin to get tight.
Okay.
That's what we experience as the fight part.
Okay.
If we cannot fight or flee, then we will do other things. And this is at the time of exposure.
Okay.
Now, if there's no threat, we just think it's a threat.
Okay.
Things are fine. We can go back down to baseline.
All right.
If it is a threat, however, and it actually materializes, I like to talk with the students to talk about a shortcut, similar to what happens when we move a app or program onto the desktop of okay. the computer.
Okay.
The brain does a shortcut.
All right.
Because at the time of exposure, everything that's going on at that time gets locked in.
Okay.
Smell, sight, sound, time of year, all of that gets locked in. And now, after that, anytime something appears, the brain does a shortcut and people get ready to fight.
Okay.
And so this is all involuntary.
Okay. I believe that.
It's all involuntary. Mm-hmm. Now, the good news is that if it only happens once, mm-hmm. you go back down to baseline, nothing happens.
Now, for our audience, mm-hmm. explain what going to baseline
You is. Go back to your normal
pattern. Of
pattern.
Okay.
You're Very no good. Longer hyper-aroused. You're no longer hyper-vigilant, looking around for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You are no longer on the just at the moment of wanting to flee.
Mm-hmm.
You go back down to feeling relaxed.
Okay.
However, if you are exposed to multiple traumatic exposures, so you can never get back down to baseline.
Okay.
Especially if you are a child,
mm-hmm.
you stay on hyper alert. If you think of your nervous system as a wall switch, you stay half on.
Okay.
You never turn off.
Okay.
And this is why it's important on what kind of exposure children have, because if they never get down to baseline, if their switch never turns off,
mm-hmm.
their system is already on hyper alert.
Okay.
And so they never learn how to be calm and relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great foundation for anxiety disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It's also a great foundation, and when I say great, I'm being facetious. It's not great. It's a horrible mm-hmm. foundation that sets up the inability to control normal anxiety
okay.
as well as more severe forms of anxiety.
Gotcha.
It can also tire the system out.
Mm-hmm.
And so people will want to numb.
Mm-hmm.
So not everyone who has an ongoing post-traumatic stress, not a disorder, but post-traumatic stress, not everyone is anxious all the time and can't sleep or anything. The other thing that the system does is people become numb
mm-hmm.
after the exposure.
Okay.
And eventually they can also just get mentally drained and tired, because you can imagine always your brain's on alert, looking and that kind of a thing all the time. So we have these two things. So most of us will have a traumatic exposure.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Stay right there with having the traumatic exposure. Mm-hmm. What should parents look for, though, so that if they see something, mm-hmm. they know how to appropriately mm-hmm. respond to their child?
Mm-hmm.
What mm-hmm. is it that I, as a parent, would want to say, that's not like Johnny or Susie,
mm-hmm.
What would I be looking for?
I'm glad you asked that. One of the things that the research identifies is that one of the best protections
mm-hmm.
for the development of what we call post-traumatic stress disorder
okay.
is what we identify as a secure attachment.
Okay.
Secure attachment is a child knowing that regardless of what they do, And now, this doesn't mean they can act out and nothing happens, but that regardless of what they do, uh-huh. that they are accepted.
Oh, okay.
So that's the difference between I don't like your behavior as opposed to I don't like you. that when a child is under distress, they know that their primary caregivers, the people they look up to protect them, will come in and protect them.
Will rescue them.
Will rescue them. Okay. There has to be a white knight, black knight, somebody's knight.
In the picture.
In the picture.
Okay.
That will come and slay the dragons.
All right.
And so children, and most parents are aware of this, even if they don't think about it consciously, we begin to teach children how to do their own self-soothing at around 6 or 7. We're preparing them all along, right?
Okay.
You know, after they, as a baby, we have to do it for them. But as they get older, the infamous phrase, tell me with your words, what's wrong, you know, right?
Most parents
know that.
Yes.
They also know the phrase, take a breath, take a deep breath, and tell me, telling them to take a deep breath is teaching them how to self-soothe.
Okay.
The going through the bedroom to find the monster.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows about that one, right?
Looking under the bed. Turning the light on and off.
Going through the closet, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? And acknowledging the child's fears, right?
Yes.
But in doing all of those things, they're watching us, and we're asking them to mimic us on how to self-soothe, right?
Okay.
So there's age-appropriate levels of self-soothing. And then when we become teenagers, we have to learn different ways of dealing with the madness. So if my child is, let's make them 7, 8.
Okay.
I always ask a parent, interviewing a child for consultation, I want to know if they develop the ability to self-soothe. Because the first ability to self-soothe, at least culturally for us, is a child would be able to sleep on their own.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Uninterrupted. They can finally sleep on their own.
Okay.
And, you know, unless they just saw a scary something on sci-fi. But that the child has a way of being able to, they might cry, they might be upset, but they have a way to try to self-soothe when they're upset about something, and age-appropriate. So not really sophisticated, but, you know, they have some ability.
Gotcha.
Because when the parent tells me that they did have that ability and now they've lost it, so we're talking about a regression in behavior.
Okay.
What happened to make them regress?
Okay. And generally, there is a something to feel that what happened question.
Yes. All behavior is for a reason.
Okay.
All behaviors.
They're not just always acting out.
Right.
They're acting because of something.
Right. Okay. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because especially for children, sometimes there's an increasing in acting out because they don't know how to tell us what happened.
Yes.
And so they act out. Right?
Yes.
Or they can't express their feelings. So they act out instead.
Gotcha.
And so let's notice what the acting out is. Let's find out what's going on. Now, just because we're finding out what's going on, depending on what it is, doesn't mean that the child will get a pass. So what do I mean by that? I'm acting out, so I'll be 7 or 8. I'm acting out because I broke something.
Okay.
I was playing in the house, the old thing. I was playing in the house where I wasn't supposed to be playing.
And what happened was
I broke something.
Okay.
And now I'm making up all kinds of stories.
Okay.
Right. And I might, you know, scream and yell and do all kinds of distractions so that I don't get punished.
Right.
As an adult, we can still find out what happened. We can still provide a punishment, but we can acknowledge the child's fear. So here, every crime cannot be a federal offense. You know, there's got to be different.
Some progression.
There's got to be some progressions. It can't all be that serious, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So that's the beginning of that.
Okay.
You know, for children.
Okay.
And then, which I think is also sort of difficult, is a challenge for parents, is to allow children to have some appropriate, chances to work things out on their own.
Right? I'm so glad you said that, because the natural inclination many times is to resolve everything for them because you just don't want them to have to suffer any of the things perhaps you did.
Right.
And so you go overboard.
Yes.
And so how, okay, let me get back to the rape mm-hmm. component just for a moment, and then we're going to move on to relationships in terms of trauma.
Okay.
You know, of course, there's the news accounts of the situation with Bill Cosby, and we're not here to discuss his guilt or innocence one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But because rape is currently in the news, mm-hmm. You talked about how when you initially was part of the program at Cedars mm-hmm. and how the mm-hmm. police department, you're the first to call. Just in terms of how women should prepare themselves or what they should say and do when in that situation, would you talk just a little bit about that so that they'll know what's the protocol so that, you know, you're not looked upon as you're not necessarily a victim, perhaps you are something else in that. So what? How should women react when there is a rape situation and the authorities have been called in, mm-hmm. and you're at the hospital. So what does it look like to help yourself? What should you say, and what should you be found doing in that situation?
Oh, boy. Okay. I think things have changed a lot. But I think one of the things I believe it's in Los Angeles County, it might be out throughout the state of California, mm-hmm. is that there is a rape protocol now. They're actually, And so when one presents themselves, so when one presents oneself to emergency room, mm-hmm. it is mandatory that law enforcement will be notified and a sexual assault program, mm-hmm. The LA Sexual Assault Commission on Women, I believe is the correct name, that provides, there are sexual assault counseling centers. That is all, that's their specialty.
Okay.
And their specialty is in all areas of the law.
All right.
One of them is notified. And so you will have someone who is a sexual assault advocate that is also there at the time that the police occur.
Okay.
Now, we understand that this creates, and this gets the confusion for the public, we have a crime that's committed.
Okay.
Rape is a crime.
All right.
And then what we have added in the state of California, so this is not national.
Okay.
What we've added in the state of California, LA County to be specific, is a protocol so that people will have immediate counseling available to them.
All right.
Around the sexual assault. So it's just around the sexual assault.
Okay.
And they need evidence.
Okay.
And so I believe the first instinct for most people mm-hmm. is to go and try to clean themselves, wash themselves, take a shower.
Mm-hmm.
That eliminates evidence.
Okay. That's what I want to talk about.
That eliminates evidence.
Okay.
And so even though that is the first, and the other thing people have to understand, a crime of sexual assault is identified as a crime against the state. And the person who has been victimized is a witness for the state.
Gotcha.
So the state takes this very seriously.
Uh-huh.
California was the first one to even include spousal rape in legislation. That was in the late 70s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's
not, and I was not aware of that. I've never really heard.
Right.
Of
yeah,
that.
but that's only California state law. In other states, you can there is no such thing as spousal rape.
Okay.
I think New York's trying to move towards that.
Okay.
But this is a crime against the state.
All right.
The person who's been victimized, the survivor, is a witness.
Okay.
The state needs their evidence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the district attorney's office in each county is going to prosecute the crime.
Okay.
So foot patrol officer, who now I think they have a specialized unit, so the officers that respond, if you go to an emergency room, mm-hmm. I believe that those are specialized officers with sexual assault. They have special training around that.
Okay.
If you, there is no mandate, how do I want to put this? If you are a minor, if you are mm-hmm. under 17 years of age mm-hmm. in the state of California, okay. a sexual assault by a person who is older than you are mm-hmm. would fall under the child abuse reporting law.
Okay. Okay.
That means that a medical doctor or a therapist or a teacher, there's like a list of people who are mandated reporters, would file with child abuse, with the Child Abuse Department yeah. of Children and Family Services.
Okay.
If you are a person who is 18 to 64 and you're what we call a dependent adult,
mm-hmm.
so you cannot conduct your own financial affairs,
okay.
that also requires all mandated reporters to report the crime.
Okay.
If you are 65 years and older,
mm-hmm.
you are now an elder under law,
okay.
and that requires all mandated reporters to mm-hmm. report okay. the crime.
All right.
So if you are an 18 to 64-year-old
mm-hmm.
and you're not a dependent adult,
mm-hmm.
and then and you did not go to the emergency room,
mm-hmm.
you would have to notify law enforcement on your own.
I see.
Or
so you don't have a support system in place.
Right. Legally, you don't have anybody that can mandate. But what you could do is you could contact one of the sexual assault counseling centers.
Okay.
And ask for an advocate to help you walk through that process.
Okay. Now, is there a time frame involved when you need to do this, because I think that's some of the problems with the ladies right. that are making the time.
Yes.
So is this like within 72 hours, 48 hours?
Always the sooner the better.
Okay.
Because okay. the evidence.
Okay.
Also, you know, what happens when we experience a traumatic exposure, mm-hmm. our memories are good until we start doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the memory begins to get mm-hmm. a little fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the longer I wait,
mm-hmm.
then, well, where did you go? Mm-hmm. Who did you, you know, there's
the
other people.
The exactness of the
circumstance. The exactness, you know, okay. there are too many other people that can be involved or situations or you forget something. Or so as soon as possible
okay.
would be
great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm so glad that you shed some light on that, because many times people are just in the trauma exposure part of
yes.
it, and the process to help prosecute the offender or whatever needs to take place, mm-hmm. you know, they're just not able.
They're in emotional shock.
Yes. And
they're in
so
emotional shock.
I'm glad that you took the time to share what the protocol mm-hmm. should be.
But now let's make this clear.
Okay.
Even though one might not prosecute, there's a lot of reasons why people don't contact the police, or they contact the police, they do get a detective, a case is open, but they refuse to testify.
Okay.
Yes. And there are a lot of reasons why people don't do that. Fear about being humiliated.
Or retaliation.
Also yeah. having to relive the process mm-hmm. over and over
yes.
and over again.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that one might not need to go to counseling.
Okay.
So all just right. because someone doesn't take legal action doesn't mean that they shouldn't get counseling. And I would say, even though trauma is the new buzzword, and a lot of people say that they know trauma, the trauma of sexual assault, one time only sexual assault,
mm-hmm.
is a very unique experience. And we have these other things about if I go to trial, people are re-traumatized because they're retelling the story, all these other kinds of things. It can impact one's relationship, all these other kind of things. So my bias would be that you go to someone who has training in sexual assault, and at least initially that contact would be through one of the sexual assault counseling centers.
Okay. Now, we're going to cover one more thing, and then we're going to go to break.
Okay.
The other thing is when the unfortunate case occurs, when it's not true, that the person that's making the accusation of sexual assault and the male is innocent, what might be some of the things that you would suggest for their process as soon as possible to clear themselves? Because we do have cases of people being accused of rape and, you know, years after their lives have been ruined, the person comes forth and says that. So in terms, in the perspective of the male, what would be your suggestion about his process?
Well, if, you know, for California, I can only speak to California.
Yes, that's
California, for the case, has been my experience, for a case to get to the district attorney level, that means that that means it has gone from the foot patrol, who took the initial case.
Okay.
They handed it off to detectives. The detectives went back out and interviewed the survivor. They take their interview. They come back. They talk. They brainstorm, have a consultation.
Okay.
Then they go to the district attorney. They might go back another time. They might go back several times to talk with the witness, the survivor of the assault, before they would go and present to the district attorney that we need to take this case.
Okay.
So if it gets that far along, there has been, there's evidence. The survivor's story is consistent under all kinds of pressures, because sometimes the detectives are not, I'm not going to say that they're not nice, but they know what they have to do. For the men, or for the person who's accused of assault, because, you know, it's, we could have all kinds of people being accused of assault. I think the really important thing is to be, you really need to listen to your, to this person. And what we're talking about right now is acquaintance.
Okay.
It sounds like we're talking about acquaintance, acquaintance rape.
Yes.
And if you are getting a feeling that this person cannot give consent, legally, you cannot give consent if you're under the influence. If you, if the person is under the influence, if they are not conscious, the law says they cannot give consent.
Okay, that's a good that's a good baseline to have, because then you don't go over that line.
Don't go over that line.
That's right.
If the, and if the woman says no,
that means no.
That means no. If the person says no, it means no.
Okay.
Don't try to convince them that they don't mean no.
Okay.
Don't, you know, don't try to make them relax. Don't, no, just leave it alone. They said no. Thank you very much. Call it a day.
All right.
Because the pushing past the boundaries is going to get you into trouble.
Okay. Okay. And I think that's very important, especially for young males to understand, especially when it's not peer-to-peer. When it's other circumstances. Thank you so much for that. Now, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about trauma in the workplace and wrap the show up.
Okay.
So thank you. So stay with us.
Okay.
Mastering math can be big fun. Fun for you and everyone. Play it each and every day. Master math the easy way. Sing, play it. Math Maze.
Why not turn math time into fun time with Math Maze, the new game craze. Get yours today at mathmaze.us.
Mom, now you can help your son master math and have big fun. Play it each and every day. Master math the easy way. Sing, play it. Math Maze.
Make sure your child owns the skills necessary for success in high school algebra. Get it now. MathMaze.us. MathMaze.us.
And now you can help your daughter play it like you know you ought to. Play it each and every day. Master Math the easy way. Say it, play it. MathMaze
cards contain both Spanish and English. Get yours today at MathMaze.us. That's MathMaze.us.
Thank you so much. Welcome back to the Carolyn Holt Show. I'm talking to Professor Linda Harbor, and we're talking about trauma because that's her specialty. And man, has she enlightened us in so many areas. But currently, we're trying to put trauma, I guess, in several different categories.
Yes.
And we just talked about it relative to rape, and you said you had one more thing you wanted to add to that, and then we're going to move to trauma in the workplace.
Yeah, I just wanted to say we've been framing this as only women being victimized.
Yes.
But men across the age span are also victims of assault.
Yes.
And their predators can be other males. Their predators can also be females.
Yes.
And so the process, I believe most of the sexual assault programs now will also work with male survivors.
Okay.
In my practice, in my individual practice, and even when I was a supervisor, a clinical director for one of the programs, I made sure that we also worked with male survivors.
And while we're right there with your practice, would you give out your phone number in case clients want to come and set up therapy sessions with you?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I'm my number is 562-696-9918.
Okay, 562-696-9918. All right. So if you have concerns and you need some help with this issue, you can feel free to call that number.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Now, moving on to trauma in the workplace, where we see a lot these days.
Yes.
I don't know I don't even know where to get started, because it often ends very tragically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so what would be the things that you would suggest employees take a look at in terms of their coworkers?
Yes.
They may want to say something if they hear or see something.
Mm-hmm. I think most workplace, or at least large organizations now, have a policy.
Okay.
Regarding workplace violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have a protocol for employees on what they should do if they have a coworker that they're concerned about.
Okay.
One of the things we know from workplace violence, as well as the school shootings, particularly the college students, shootings, that someone leaked a little bit.
Okay.
And we know with the school shooting, sometimes, especially in the high schools, some of the friends of the shooter has said, oh, he said something and I blew it off.
Okay.
So you can't blow it off.
Okay.
People are frustrated. There's a lot of anxiety because of the situation in the country, the economics, the whole bit.
Yeah.
A lot of stressors.
Yeah.
But when someone says something that is goes to harm towards another, that needs to be attended to. You just can't brush it under the rug.
Okay.
So whatever the protocol is, and if people don't know what their protocol is at their workplace, then they need to find out what it is.
Okay.
All schools, I know LA Unified does have a procedure. Actually, the federal government mandated a procedure for all schools through college after Virginia Tech.
Wow.
So there are procedures in place on who to notify, but I guess the biggest thing is don't ignore the behavior.
Okay.
Don't minimize the behavior.
Okay.
You know, there are the protocols that are in place to interview the person to see if they're just blowing off steam. But that's not for friends and colleagues. That's to, you have to say, you know, the old thing, if you see something, say something. If you hear something, you need to say something.
Okay. So when your coworker says something that sounds a little strange.
Depending on your relationship with them, if it's somebody that you have a relationship with, you know, you can do the old thing, oh, you know, don't say that, or don't kid about that. And if they say, I'm not kidding, okay, well.
Then that's a different conversation.
That's a different conversation.
Yeah.
Right. If it's someone that you don't know in that kind of way and you feel threatened, then you need to, I'm going to say whatever the procedures are in place.
Okay.
If that means that you have a relationship with your supervisor, let's just make it that.
All right.
that you just want to go talk to your supervisor about it, and that's not going to bring all of HR down. Mm-hmm. Okay, go do that.
Okay.
But to ignore it,
all right,
could create larger problems later.
Yes.
So I'm going to put it that way so people can do what they need to do and not have all of HR down on somebody.
Yes. Well, I'm just thinking about the young man and his wife that did the shootings in San Bernardino. Mm-hmm. And it appeared that it was a holiday season.
Yes,
a festive occasion.
Yes.
And she, the wife of mm-hmm. this shooter, had just had a baby recently. Mm-hmm. And so, and everybody said, there was no real indicator that they were at this point.
Yes.
So, I'm just trying to think in terms of the best way to kind of keep ourselves safe.
Well, I think that brings up, because of the other part of my critical incident stuff is I have worked. I worked September 11th. I didn't go out to Oklahoma, but I was providing support here,
wow.
working with the federal government for Oklahoma.
Okay.
I've been through Red Cross. I've also responded to several plane crashes, and I think aviation is supposed to be my specialty.
Oh, okay.
And then other kinds of disaster, but. And I also did some work with airport security back in the day. Here is the reality.
Okay.
People who have something well planned, mm-hmm. and at the time I worked airport security, they discussed it.
Okay.
They're not going to leak. Just okay. like somebody, so you're not going to catch everything. There's
All right.
no absolute safety.
All right.
One of the things that you notice now is that when you go to public events, they very clearly identify, this is after Colorado, the Colorado shooting and things. When you go into a public event, know your exits. It's just not the airport or the airplane. Okay. Know your emergency exits. Know the nearest one and a backup. There's a reason for that. That is so that you can get out,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Safely,
yeah. you know. So that's really, important to listen to that, to be aware of that.
Okay.
And it's unfortunate, but, that's the world we, live in now.
Yes.
So there might not be a leak.
Okay.
It might not be anybody's fault.
While there may not be a leak, mm-hmm. you have to be proactive in terms of your reaction to whatever yes. takes place.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, Linda, thank you so much. I appreciate you. I want you to come back because
okay.
this is an excellent broad topic,
yes.
and we want to talk more.
Okay.
But thank you so much for your participation in tonight's show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
And I want to say to my audience, thank you so much. As always on this show, the goal is to bring you from misery to magnificence and from subpar to spectacular. Have a wonderful night. And next week, we're going to honor fathers for Father's Day. God bless and good night.
Mastering math can be big fun, fun for you and everyone. Play it each and every day. Master math the easy way.
Sing, play it. Math Maze.
Why not turn math time into fun time with Math Maze, the new game craze. Get yours today at mathmaze.us.
Mom, now you can help your son master math and have big fun. Play it each and every day. Master math the easy way.
Sing, play it. Math Maze.
Make sure your child owns the skills necessary for success in high school algebra. Get it now. MathMaze.us. MathMaze.us.
And now you can help your daughter play it like you know you ought to. Play it each and every day. Master Math the easy way. Say it, play it.
Math Maze cards contain both Spanish and English. Get yours today at MathMaze.us. That's MathMaze.us.
Ooh, child.